Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, America, and good morning, world. Good morning, America, and good morning, world. Hope everybody is well and blessed, doing the best they can in their certain situation, in their piece of the planet, their space, in this big blue marble. Just hold on, because change is coming. I guarantee you, we see it every day. I see it every day. I do a lot of research and background activity and different things like that, just to see how we are evolving as a human race. And quite honestly, now the media puts a whole lot of negativity out there. They really do. And there's a whole lot of negative things that are taking place, you know, in the world in this day and time, but prophecy is being fulfilled, and the world is actually becoming a better place. Let me just put this out here. The name of this broadcast, this is February the 15th. Happy belated Valentine's Day to all the Valentines out there throughout the world. Yesterday I had a wonderful day. It was simple and not a whole lot of things going on, but it was a very nice and enjoyable and blessed day, as are all days that we make it, you know, and I make every day a blessed day, an enjoyable day. Just looking at the whole scope of things is what we need to do, and, you know, be able to count our blessings. But the name of this broadcast is the U.S. Constitution and Jesus. And the reason there's no relationship there, but I'm going to touch on, you know, both of these particular subjects. So I just went ahead and named it that, and, you know, I thought it was a little catchy, and just at the same time, so, you know, I just posted it up there like that. But I want to point this out right quick in reference to this world becoming a better place. If you notice in the Super Bowl, I know that probably everybody that listens to this broadcast probably watched the Super Bowl. A great event, a really, really great event. I want to congratulate Peyton Manning on winning his second Super Bowl. The old man got it, you know, got one, got another one. And the reason I say that is because I didn't want there to be some type of thing going on, you know, rift going on between Peyton and Eli, his little brother, during a Manning family reunion. And you could just see, you know, I could imagine Eli not being the better of two quarterbacks between the two of them, sitting up there, you know, saying, well, hey, I got two Super Bowl rings and you only got one. You know, yet and still, you know, Peyton was the most, you know, prolific passer, field general, field surgeon, quarterback, probably the best, if not one of the best, if not the best. You know, I would put him up there as the best, you know, in the history of the NFL, just because of his longevity and his ability to win a Super Bowl at 40-some years old. Is, you know, is remarkable, is commendable, you know, that means he still has his, you know, his wit and his talent about him at this tender age. It was kind of amazing too that if you watch the Super Bowl, you could kind of see Eli up there, you know, when Peyton scored a touchdown or Peyton had, you know, they had the camera just happened to be up on the press box. The executive box, you know, where the Manning family was at, everybody was going hysterics, you know, going hysterical. And Eli was just kind of sitting there calm with kind of a little smirky look on his face, like, you know, like he's a little bit jealous of his brother. And I mean, and that's just human nature. That's okay. That's human nature to be, you know, a bit jealous, you know, a big brother out there getting that second Super Bowl ring and all the, you know, all the glory and accolades that go along with it and all that kind of stuff, you know, but you could just see it, you know, and I'm pretty sure that, you know, it squashed all that, you know, conversation about having that family reunion, the Peyton Manning reunion, and him being able to hold those two rings over Peyton's head while Peyton only had one. Well, that's been settled now because they both have two. Peyton scored and erased a number of historical achievements, athletic achievements by winning in Super Bowl 200 to win, and just a whole number of great things to that guy. And now, to be quite honest, I was kind of going for the Carolina Panthers. I would have liked to have seen Cam Newton win one, and simply because he's giving the game back to the kids, to the children. I think that giving that game ball, to the children and stuff, making a point to do so when he scores a touchdown is huge. It's huge in that sport and in NFL sport, because they don't have to do that, but it's so inspiring, for the children to receive that. I mean, that one little girl that he gave the ball to, I mean, her mouth just flung open, her eyes got as big as saucers, and, I mean, that says it all, that really says it all. And, yeah, he's a little cocky and arrogant and things of that nature, but when he makes gestures such as that and they don't have to, that kind of, puts it, it dims that, arrogancy, quite a bit, almost to nothing. Because they are conscious, and they do give back, to those who should be given back to, and that's the children that have the dreams and aspirations, to be on that particular field, someday in their lifetime. And that may be the incentive to do so. So I commend all of that. But, Peyton got one. But now, in the Super Bowl halftime, now let me just say this too. Lady Gaga sang the American anthem, and she done a remarkable job. She was dressed in the red and had the red eyeshadow, and it looked a little, because you hear rumors and things of that nature that she's a little demonic, or she's a little into the Illuminati, or all this other kind of stuff, So that's just is what it is. And most of us are aware of all that. But when this young lady sung the national anthem, she sung it from the heart. She really did. She done a great job. It sounded really, really good. She put everything she had into it. She didn't overdo it. She didn't underdo it. It was just right. It was a very nice compliment to our national anthem. And she said, God bless everyone. I think she said, God bless everybody, or God bless, I don't know if she said, God bless America, or God bless everyone. It was something in that regard, but the reference of God was there. And you, on that particular level, if you have a certain philosophy or belief, and it's not of God, you don't necessarily feel compelled to put him out of your mouth, or put God out of your mouth. She didn't have to say that. She could, she done a remarkable job. She could have just ended it off right there and just said, thank you, or let's play ball, or whatever the case may be. But she did. She clearly made a reference to God. And that is a change, folks. I mean, that, that's a realistic change, because I feel that really truly came from her heart. And she just had that God felt moment, and it overtook her, and it overtook, people that were tuned in and tuned into the spirit of things that were going on at that time. It got me. I definitely paid attention to it, and I felt the honesty there, and I received it in that manner. That was a great thing, because that's what it's all about, is bringing all of mankind back to God. That's our mission. That's what we are here, and that's what we are placed here for. That's what the children of Israel, the true children of Israel, are here, on this earth and in this planet and in this nation, in this country, to do. That is our mission. That is what God has placed us here for. And and what we are, at will, at his will to do, you see. And that's the purpose of this broadcast, because we can live in this world and on this planet in harmony and goodness and greatness and support of one another, even more so than we can in destructing hatred of one another, and it can be done. I do it every day, so I know that it can be done. But also, as a follow-up to that, to support Lady Gaga's, you know, giving of the national anthem. If you notice at halftime, the halftime show was Coldplay. Done a great job. Just, you know, I didn't know they played some of the songs because I hear them on the radio, but I didn't know they actually performed those songs. They, phenomenal guys, phenomenal group. But if you notice, they had Beyonce, Coldplay, and Bruno Mars, you know, all side by side singing the song of joy and happiness and fellowship and, you know, they just really kind of brought it all together, if you will. But at the end of that, now, and also, you know, Beyonce has done some controversial. Her last, you know, album is a bit controversial. Her last thing that she dropped is a bit controversial, you know, talking about her roots and things of that nature. But, you know, it is her roots. You know, it is, you know, it is what it is, you know. And we have to accept that, you know, all people, black, white, brown, red, you know, we just have to accept that. We can't allow something that, you know, is, you know, what would be, you know, considered controversial because it is the belief and mindset, you know, of an individual or a group of individuals, you know, affect, you know, the overall, you know, belief of all individuals, you know, especially when we stand aligned, you know, in, you know, with and for God. You see, that is the important thing. And when we encounter things of that nature, you know, we kind of know from whence they come, you know, whether it be anger or whatever the case may be, but we can embrace that with understanding firstly, then embrace that with, you know, dialogue, and then embrace that with love to conclude that. And this is exactly what they did in the halftime show. If you notice that we have Beyonce, Coldplay, Bruno Mars, arm in arm, sitting there on the stage. Now, we're showing diversity there. I don't know if you understand the subliminal, you know, message here or not, but it showed a clear and diverse, you know, people, you know, assembled on one stage, on one, you know, effort, you know, supplying, you know, one message of oneness out there to all mankind. Now, I don't know if they know that they, you know, I'm sure that they did that, you know, to show that type of diversity, but I don't know if they knew how, to the magnitude of which they show that in the terms of oneness or one family or one people, you know, but they certainly did that knowing or unknowingly. And then at the end of their halftime, you know, musical presentation, if you notice, there was a subliminal message. It was a huge subliminal message that was displayed in the stands there of the audience. And I think what they did was like, they gave them those flip cards, those color flip cards, and everyone's just to hold a card up. Now, I'm sure that they didn't tell, you know, the audience, you know, if this played out the way I suspect it did, you know, what they were actually, the word they was actually spelling or what they was actually doing by flipping these cards. And the reason I don't think that they told them, because there may have been people just honorary enough and obnoxious enough not to flip their cards, you know, and cause, you know, a broken message, if you will. But, you know, when they flipped the cards over, they didn't say anything about this. This is what made it so cool and so, you know, impacting. That, you know, when they flipped it over, the word, it was a huge half a stadium, and the word was love. You see, they could have picked any word. They could have picked peace, or they could have picked unity, or they could have picked, you know, whatever, you know, the word they want. But they picked one simple word, and that was love. And that's what this broadcast is all about. You know, and I'm telling you, this is, you know, the ears of influence, you know, they tune in, you know, this is a broad broadcast, you know, a very broad broadcast. And we're making a change. We're making strides to make things better, to make this a better planet and a better place. But that word love came up. And what I did was I went around and asked people just randomly, did you catch the word that was displayed, you know, at the end of the halftime musical presentation? And they were like, love. And I said, And I asked a couple, love. Now, the crazy thing about it, or the way that they did this, they didn't say one word about that word. after the halftime, you know, presentation, you know, I didn't hear it. I didn't hear anything, you know, where they pointed to, you know, or how cool was that or how nice was that, you know, that they would display that word love. Because I believe they made this a subliminal message. A subliminal message has a lot more impact and a lot more staying power, you know, in our conscience than something that we talk about and bring forward. You know, it's just something about, you know, like you'll hear a little catchphrase or you'll hear a little catch song or a little click song or something, and that thing will play in your mind, you know, for a long time. And I promise you that when it plays in your mind for a period of time, you don't forget it. You know, it's there. And that's a subliminal, you know, message and how powerful it truly is, you see. But anyhow, they put that word up there, love, because folks, this is what the prophecy is evolving to. The prophetic word, as in the scripture, and I'm talking about ancient scriptures, the scriptures that predate, you know, more modern scriptures such as the Quran and different earlier, you know, or later texts. I'm talking about scriptures that predate all of these different scriptures, you know, by several, you know, hundreds and even thousands of years. The word love encompasses all, okay? And this is what we are evolving to. We see it in the you know, demilitarization of this United States. We see it in what they're doing around the world in terms of bringing down those who would divide nations and supporting those who would unify nations. You know, you got to understand that there's an old prophecy talking about one world order. Now, one world order can only be done if there is only one order in the world. We have to flip that script around, you see. And how can you have one order in the world when you have an opposing order? You can't. There's no way. So the opposition or the opposing order has to be dealt with in some way, form, or fashion in order for that to, you know, come about, for the one world order to come about. Now, again, the one world order is not going to be a demonic order, you know, and all of this, you know, mark of the beast and type things like that. You know, the one world order will be God's order, the one world under God, not divisible. And it will have liberty and justice for all mankind. And that's a beautiful thing, you see. But it's interesting because it won't be a democracy. It won't be a voted order. You know, it'll be an order of nations by appointees of nations, but they will be under one world guidance or one world order, and it will be overseen by the Spirit of God and the nature of God. You see, He's going to prevail. You know. This is future thought, you know, and a lot of people don't understand this, you know, because they're so, you know, secular, so into their own circles that they don't see the vision outside of their circles and their realms and stuff to see this type of vision, you know. But as man evolves in his intellect or his intelligence, then, you know, he will be able to take on these concepts and take on these beliefs and this notion, if you will, and this way of life and this prophesized way of life, this prophesized way of our human existence, it'll be more understandable and accepting with intelligence. You see what I'm saying? Because that breeds understanding. You know, and as long as we can do things, you know, proactively, collectively, in the common and for the common good of all mankind, of all humanity, It is in the way and the will of God, and it will manifest itself and magnify itself. You know, it will be a harmonic existence, you know, in the universe. You see, God and the universe are in perfect harmony. We have to get there in the alignment. So anyhow, I just want to point that out. I want to point that out because that was huge. That was big. And it represents, you know, where we're going as a human race. And I just wanted everybody to kind of be conscious of that and do your part, you know, in that evolution, in this human evolution, into intellectual human evolution. Do your part. Be intelligent about this evolution. You see, all of, you know, and this goes to the areas of influence. You know, we have to be intellect, you know, in our evolution. As we create and structure and restructure this planet for its longevity, you see, because we want our children's children's children, you know, to have a good and wholesome way of life and live long and die naturally, you see, not by the craziness and the hatred of at the hands of a man, you know, a disturbed mind or a man. You know, we certainly don't want that. And it would help combat, you know, all of these killings and shootings and all these mentalities that where these, you know, people say that, you know, where that you got to look at his mental instability and all this other kind of stuff to take guns and shoot people and randomly, like, you know, Shady Hook and all that kind of stuff. But if we are, you know, conducting society in a way of love and outpouring of love and nurturing and to where, you know, that mind could, you know, those eyes of that mind could see that, you know, in society, then the subliminal message and the message that is received in those eyes to that mind will be correct, will be corrected, you know, in that same manner. You know, say, he won't, the people won't have that mentality and mindset, you know, because that's not what's being, you know, received in, you know, in their eyes, you know, to disturb their mind, to alter their mind, to think in, you know, diabolic ways and measure. Okay, so that's pretty simple and straightforward there. Now, just kind of jumping over right quick, because I did get a little off track as I normally do, but that's okay. That's why I broadcast, you know, and I want to increase people coming here. You know, that's why I say, you know, a lot of good food for thought. You know, I want to, you know, just to be a large, you know, following, and it's growing every day, and I thank everyone for doing that, and for coming here and Log Talk Radio for allowing this venue. Now we're going to jump tracks here because we're about the Constitution. And let me hold on just a second. Let me pull this up because we got a question here of who can and who can't be a United States president. Now I'm looking directly at the Constitution of the United States here, and let me see here. Okay, that's about that. Let me find. Well, doggone it, I had it queued up here, and let me see where we at. Article 2, Section 1, fifth paragraph. Article 2, Section 1. Okay, fifth paragraph. Okay, now, here's how this reads. Article 2, Section 1, in the fifth paragraph reads, no person except a natural-born citizen. You see? Now, from this point, it should have been closed right here. The Constitution should have been closed right here. No person except a natural-born citizen is eligible to be a United States president. Or a president of the United States, okay? But the confusion goes on, and you can't have two. You just, it can, you know, no person except a natural-born citizen, then it has a comma, or a citizen of the United States, comma, at the time of the adoption of this Constitution shall be eligible to the office of president, okay? Now, There's a semicolon there, and it should have been period. It should have been closed right there. shall be eligible to the office of the President of the United States. You see, because what that would have done, it would close this whole argument. It would have just capped it right then and there by punctuation. You know, that no person except a natural-born citizen or a citizen of the United States at the time of the adoption of the Constitution shall be eligible to the office of president, period, right then and there, okay? Because a natural-born citizen is someone that is born, you know, in these United States, okay, or in the territory of the United States by birth. You see, at that particular time of birth, when he comes forth the womb through the birth canal onto this earth, you know, if he's born in the territories of the United States, and then they are a United States citizen, or instead of not a naturalized citizen of the United States. Now, what a naturalized citizen is, someone that is born in another country, you see, but goes through a naturalization process, a process of naturalization to become a United States citizen, sworn in and by, you know, years in the United States and all this, to become naturalized as a naturalized citizen, not a natural born citizen, okay? But this, after the semicolon here, it says, neither shall any person be eligible to that office who shall not have attained to the age of 35 and been 14 years a resident within the United States. Now, see, that's where it gets cloudy, where it says, and been 14 years a resident within the United States. So, see, that right there is where it gets a little, you know, a little cloudy, a little shady there, but you can't have two. You see, a natural-born citizen cannot be a naturalized citizen of the United States. It can't be, you know, unless, well, now, could they have been born in the United States as a natural-born citizen, left the United States, became a citizen of another country, then returned back to the United States, lived here for an additional 14 years as a resident of the United States, which will then create and conclude their eligibility to become the president of the United States? I think we just answered that question there. I think that's how that was to read. I think that's how what they set forth for this to be. That you were natural born, left the United States, became a citizen of, say, for instance, Barbados or something like that, some resort place. That's where I'd want to go. Or Bahamas or something like that. Nice. And then come back to the United States and live for 14 years to reclaim your natural born citizenship. And I guess you would have to go through a naturalization process, you know, to become, you know, but you started out, you originally was a natural-born citizen. Now, see, this makes Ted Cruz ineligible to be, I got 90 seconds, so I'm going to keep on reading here. Love one another, take care of one another, it's the right thing to do, it's what God wants us to do, simply because God is love. Love, 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 love. That's the word. And that's what it's all about. But anyhow, but that would conclude that Ted Cruz is actually ineligible. And where he is ineligible is because he doesn't fit all the criteria of this requirement to become president. See, it says no person except a natural born citizen or a citizen of the United States at the time of the creation of this Constitution is eligible to be president of the United States. So that right there, it nullifies Ted Cruz's eligibility to become president of these United States, because he was born when he came through the birth canal of his mother. You see, he was born in the country of Canada, in the territory of the Canadian territory, you see, onto this earth. So that right there is what disqualifies him from being a president in these United States based upon this Constitution. Amen and thank God for clarity. That's all I got to say in that regard. Okay, now, we're going to jump to Article 2, Section 2, Paragraph 3. Okay, it says I got 10 seconds, but I'm going to keep on talking because this is good stuff, okay? Article 2, Section 2, Paragraph 2. Now, and it's talking about the powers of the president to appoint, because the Supreme Court, I think his name was Scalia, God bless him and rest his soul, passed away unexpectedly at 79 years old. I think while he was on vacation at some resort having a good time, said he wasn't feeling good. Next thing you know, he passed away, and he passed away in his sleep. Folks, that's a blessing. You know, to pass away in your sleep, that is really the ultimate blessing. You know, that's just, excuse me, that's the way to go, you know, since we all must go. But anyhow, now it's a scramble, you know, to backfill that position, or, you know, in the Supreme Court. So, again, the Constitution supersedes. Constitution, you know, was written to rule over all, you know, ideologies and ways of thinking and all this other kind of stuff. The guys who wrote the Constitution were pretty doggone sharp, you know, and they really knew what they were, you know, what they were doing when they did it, you know. And I thank God for this law of the land, you know, so that we wouldn't have, at differences and, you know, uprisings and all these other type of craziness, you know, just on basis of, you know, men, you know, feeling a certain way about a certain thing, you know, okay. But anyhow, it says that the president is the commander in chief of the Army, Navy, and all the militia in the states and things of that nature. We know all of that, okay, in writing and in principle. You know, he is the executive, you know, officer of all of these things. Now, he shall have, now reading paragraph 2, he shall have power by and with the advice and consent. Okay, now the consent of the Senate, let's look at the word consent. Consent means the allowing, you know, or the agreement. That's what the word consent means, of the Senate, okay, to make treaties provided two-thirds of the Senate present concur or agree. Two-thirds of the senators, you know, have to be present and have to agree. And he shall nominate and by and with the advice and consent, the word of consent again, of the Senate, shall appoint ambassadors, other public ministers and counsel, judges of the Supreme Court, and all other officers of the United States whose appointment are not herein otherwise provided for, and which shall be established by law, but the Congress may by law vest the appointment of such inferior officers as they think proper in the president alone, in the courts of the law, and in the heads of departments. Okay, so what this is saying here is clarity. In clarity, because I know there's a discussion right now that's going on about President Obama's, you know, having authority, you know, to appoint, okay, the next Supreme Court justice. Now, by this Constitution, it says that he shall appoint ambassadors, other public ministers, and counsels, judges of the Supreme Court. So the president has the power and the authority to appoint the next Supreme Court justice without question by this here Constitution. There's a law of the land. So he can appoint this individual. Now they have to be vested. They have to, you know, now, you know, Senate is going to, you know, have to give consent, you know, on this appointment, but the president can't appoint this person right here and today. He has the authority to appoint them. He does not have to stop and wait for the next president to come along, you know, unless he, you know, for some strange and crazy reason chooses to do so. I can't see, you know, President Obama, you know, stepping back like that. I think that he's got somebody already in the chamber ready to go. For that position, I hope and pray, and I'm sure he does. I hope he executes this really quickly, you know, to squash all this nonsense, you know, because clearly by the Constitution, you know, he has the authority to appoint. Okay, now the consent and all that other kind of stuff that comes behind it, you know, an investment by law and stuff like that, you know, that's something that, you know, the Senate, you know, has, you know, the ability to, you know, stand up against, you know, but if they would be smart about this, they would just go ahead, they would, you know, stand down and let this, you know, go forward, you know, because the backlash from this will be very very huge, and it will be damaging, you know, because it would be looked at as a political gesture, and from the Republican, you know, and conservative side, and another, you know, blocking of the president. You know, the president has done a remarkable job in the eyes of all of this naysay, you know, 4.9% unemployment, that's the best it's been since 2008. Who was president prior to that? Okay? When unemployment, you know, you know, just blew off the doggone charts. You know, we're going to touch on George W. Bush right quick in a little bit here. But 151,000 new jobs, the economy is buzzing along at a nice clip now. The stock market situation, that's a whole separate set of things, because that's money. And that's money doing some things that's in preparation for all of this stuff that I'm talking about, you know, and in the future scope of things. This is why they're drawing down, you know, the American economy and the stock market. You know, it has to draw down the balance. We'll just say that. They have to draw it down to balance it globally. When you're talking about globalization, you know, that one has to be drawn down and one has to be drawn up as we pull it up. So that's what that process is all about. But in terms of, you know, the overall stability of the American economy is strong. Look at gas prices. You know, we got, you know, nations coming on board with plenty of gluts of oil, like Iran and different things like that. You know, so our gas prices are low now. It's kind of ironic that when gas prices go down, you know, our food products and food, you know, consumables and things go up, you know, that's kind of messed up. We need to, if we get them both down at the same time, you know, because people don't really, aren't really that conscious of it, you know, or they don't understand why that is. And it doesn't have to be, you know, we can certainly have both down at the same time. And ultimately we will have to, because, you know, our earning won't be as much as or as great, you know, but it will be, you know, the longevity will be there. You see, by doing, you know, what they're moving into in this globalization and nation building, all this kind of stuff, it makes the American economy more stable, because we'll have more jobs and we'll be doing a lot more outsourcing. You know, they're going to need roads, toilets, they're going to need, you know, you name it, faucets, light bulbs, shingles, building material, you know, roads, all everything, cars, houses, trains, planes, automobiles. Everything, you know, in nation building. And we can supply that. We have the technological capabilities and the industrial, you know, capabilities, you know, to supply that, to, you know, to nations. So that's going to be our longevity, you know, for the economy of this great nation and of others joined in coalition, you know, to develop, you know, the world. So that creates stability and longevity, but we have to do it together. We can't do it, you know, divided. You see, and that's what we're moving towards. Now, quickly, I want to touch on George WB, you know, coming on the campaign trail with his younger brother, Jeb. And this is a grave mistake. I mean, this is a grave mistake because, and the reason I say that is because, I, you know, being personally, I like GWB. I know what his purpose was. He did his job really well in terms of, you know, bringing down and breaking the American economy. But that's what he was placed there to do. He didn't do that arbitrarily. He didn't do that just on his own free will or his own free judgment or anything like that. That's what he was placed there to do. You know, the economy has to ebb and flow. You see, that's just the way it does. It goes up and down and stuff. But, you know, and that's what's his job. And it seems like, you know, and if you think about the conservative and liberal, you know, concept behind, you know, both sides of the fence or the aisle, if you will, you know, one is to liberate, or to be liberal or liberate, and the other one is to conserve or constrict, you see. So we can certainly look at it in that manner, because that's what it actually is, and it creates the ebb and flow, you know, of the American economy. But to bring, you know, GW along, you know, and that's just like the stimulus money that came down, you know, during George W.'s, you know, tenure in office and stuff. That money just hit the ground and disappeared. You know, I remember when people was walking around like, well, what happened to, you know, to the stimulus money? Where did it go? You know, well, it was quickly absorbed into the banks, and, of course, he got a big chunk of it, and Dick and, you know, all the boys and all of them, you know, broke off a big chunk of it, and it was gone. You know, they did, you know, a few of them, several of them, and didn't nobody say anything about it. That was the amazing thing about it. They would hit, boom, and be gone, and it didn't help stimulate the American economy, not with losing 700,000 jobs, you know, per month, 800,000 jobs a month. There's no stimulation there. You know, that doesn't equate to stimulation. All this money coming down, and poof, is gone. You know, did it go over to the war in Iraq, which was a mistake because there was no weapons of mass destruction? See, all of these negative things, you know, by bringing, you know, GW back, you know. And he still looks presidential. The guy looks great, you know. And which, you know, Jeb doesn't look presidential because he's not. You know, one looks strong and has a fine, you know, backbone. The other one looks like, you know, big wimpy, you know. And that's not going to work. That's just not going to work for America. I'm sorry. But anyhow, that's gonna probably sink Jeb's ship by bringing GW back, you know, and bringing him on the trail and stuff, because, you know, people have had enough time to digest and analyze, you know, all the things, you know, that went wrong, you know, or you know, appeared to go wrong, but by design, you know, in the GWB presidency, you know. So, and it has a negative lingering effect. And what they're going to do is they're going to look at that and compare it, you know, to Jeb, you know, and be fearful, you know, of that same activity taking place in this modern day and time, you know, with all the progression that we've had, you know, under the Obama administration. And against all this, you know, opposition, and McConnell said that we're going to stop him. That's what we're going to do. You know, not looking, that was before he got in there and all that kind of stuff, you know, that we're just going to stop him from doing the things he wants to do. Now, I know that everybody says, nah, it's not anything to do with race or anything like that, but we are all creatures, you know, human creatures of our kind, if you will, and which is only one human kind. But we have to, like I say, intellectually evolve to that. But, you know, it's just that, you know, they look at him as a black man, you know, in the leadership of these United States, of this great and powerful nation, and would try to find fault and flaw, you know, just because of who he is. You know, if you would allow his policies to prevail and what he wants to do, you know, for this great nation and things like that, this thing would take off like a rocket, you know, and everybody would be, you know, singing and dancing again, like, you know, when Mr. Clinton was in there with a positive surplus of money, you know, and saxophone playing and party and all. That's what this nation needs to get back to, and it will. We're going to evolve to that. You know, when all this stuff, you know, globalization takes place, you know, and everything stabilizes and gets into its gear and its proper order and its proper gear, you know, it's going to be a great time, because we'll see that we'll have the vision of longevity, you know, in our front view mirror, and we won't be paying so much attention to our rear view mirror, you know, and that's going to bring the global, you know, the national and global stability, you know, to this earth. And that's when we can, you know, when God's incorporated in everything and prophecies being fulfilled, and, you know, we are all one people with one common objective and initiative and everything like that, man, it's going to be a great time. I hope to see it. You know, I'm pretty sure I'll see some of it. At least I'm instrumental in, you know, and spearheading it and getting it going. But we're gonna put the mentality and mindset into humanity to see it forward. And that's going to be a beautiful and blessed thing. So anyhow, that's my broadcast for today. Again, like I always say, love one another. Take care of one another. It's the right thing to do. It's what God wants you to do. Why? Simply because God is love. Thanks for joining me. Come back and say and listen. Hear me next time. And we'll talk to you again real soon. Take care for now. And so long. And God bless.